Prodigy Pen, and you're listening to The Hammer.
Donald Cowboy Show, and you're listening to The Hammer.
What's up, guys? This is Smooth Ben Anderson, and you're listening to The Hammer.
This is Steve Johnson, and you're listening to The Hammer.
This is Chris Weidman, and you're listening to the 93.3 The Hammer.
This is Matt Hughes, and you're listening to The Hammer.
I'm Michael DeCount Bisping, and you're listening to Hammer MMM.
Roy McDonald.
TJ Dillashaw.
Now Mark The Hammer Coleman, and you're listening to The Hammer.
Hey, welcome to The Hammer. This is Steve Jeffrey along with
Greg Pearson. How's it going, guys?
And Liam Dunlop.
And you're listening to us at 93.3 CFMU and thehammermma.com. And see Greg and Liam here. I don't see Dave at the moment. Maybe he'll be joining us later. Sorry, we didn't have a show last week. We had to run a rerun on the radio station. Greg, Liam, and myself were all out of town. There was no show, but the three of us are here. We are here to talk about UFC 308 a week late. We didn't get to preview it, but we'll talk about the results in the first half of this week's show. And in the second half of the show, there's like a bit of news. There's an upcoming UFC in Edmonton, UFC Fight Night, that I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about, and that should be it. And hey, Dave's here. Dave, what's up?
No, that's just enough.
Just did the intro. Well, I'm glad you can make it. We unfortunately all left you high and dry last week, and there was no show. But we can talk about UFC 308 right now. Let's see what we think here. The is from Abu Dhabi. UFC's going there fairly regularly now, it looks like. And they brought a hell of a main event. This featherweight, I wish we could have talked about it last week. I wish we had a show. The featherweight title, new champion Ilia Topuria, just won the belt off of Alexander Volkanovski. His first defense was against Max Holloway, former champion. What a hell of a first defense. And Max Holloway is still a pound-for-pound level fighter. Couldn't wait to see this fight. Hey, it was pretty damn good for like 11 or 12 minutes that it lasted. Quite a bit of action there. And then early in the third round, Ilia Topuria, all that power, knocks out his second former featherweight champion in a row. Max Holloway, first time ever knocked out. He's taken a million strikes, never goes down. Ilia Topuria is the man who found the button.
Yeah, it was a clinic. I mean, you got one of the best boxers in the history of MMA in Holloway. Volume, action. But then you got a beast. Topuria, man, I've loved this guy since the start. He's incredible. Just he found the way. Third round against one of the toughest guys in MMA history, and he wound up getting the knockout. And it was just, such a well-executed shot. I mean, it's not like it was a fancy jumping, you know, spinning thing or whatever. It was just great boxing, connect, flush, and down Holloway went. So, yeah, it was a beautiful performance and a great fight.
So, in boxing, the kind of, like, the rock, paper, scissors of boxing is that you've got, like, brawlers, infighters, and outfighters. Max Holloway's got great boxing, but he's always been an outfighter. He's always relied on, I'm going to be fighting at a fairly long range with my stubby arms, and I'm going to outpoint you and outpace you, and I'm going to break you down over a period of time. And Ilya Topuria is, he's a much better boxer than any of the other guys that are boxing the division other than Holloway, and he happens to be an infighter. He's good at getting in close, slipping those shots, and unloading with hooks to the body and to the head. And I think, like, you know, obviously he knocked Max Holloway out, and it was a beautiful shot, but calling it just a beautiful shot kind of, I think, underplays how well he was doing, because you could tell, like, the hooks to the body were really starting to wear on Max. You could tell he was slowing down. And, you know, I've never really seen Max lose cardio like that in the middle of a fight. Max is still great. He's still one of the best ever. But ultimately, time comes from us all. He's taken hundreds and hundreds of punches over the last couple of years. And he's fighting this monstrous boxer who's able to box with him, which most other guys can't do. So, I mean, like, Topuria, I just don't think there's anyone in the division right now who has an answer for him, because I think to beat him, you're going to have to either out-wrestle him, or you're going to have to be such a monstrous brawler that, like, when he comes in to throw hooks at you, you can just straight up knock him out. And I just don't think that fighter's there right now in the division.
Yeah, they gave Volk pretty much the rematch. They pretty much said at the end of the fight that Volk deserves the rematch, which, obviously, like, he's lost once to Topuria, but in a pretty rough fashion. And then no one thought Max Holloway could get knocked out. Like, look at the guys he just recently fought. He's fought Volk. He's fought Gaethje, who has incredible knockout power. And then Topuria just has that one strike knockout power at 145 that is so scary. And he has good grappling. He has great boxing. He has good kicks. It's like, I agree with Dave. I don't see anyone in featherweight being able to touch Topuria for a long time. How old is he? 27? Like, he's still so young. He's in the prime of his career. He's incredible, and he's an absolute monster with incredible knockout power and great range and great effort. And he's just an intelligent, smart fighter. So yeah, featherweight's going to be Topuria's for a long while, I feel.
With Volk, like, Volk is 36, Topuria's already beat him decisively. Holloway's 32, and he's not going to get younger by the time he gets a rematch with Topuria. I just think that right now, he's going to be the reigning champion for at least another year or two.
Yeah, at least if there isn't, like, not an up-and-coming guy that kind of rockets up so fast. But yeah, like, these two, some of the greatest fighters of all time, Volkanovski and Holloway, they're number one and two in the division. He wiped them out. They're already going back to the Volkanovski rematch that I was a little surprised about, because and he's lost three of his last four. Two of them were at lightweight, but it's like, isn't there a fresher guy? And the only other name, really, number three right below Volk and Holloway, is Diego Lopez. I'm a month out from saying I love Diego Lopez, but he's not a title-level guy. And now he is. He beat Ortega or whatever. But it's either Volk or Lopez, and, like, Lopez is a good grappler. Evlov's a good wrestler. Maybe there's a wrestling thing, but the word on Topuria is that wrestling game is his ground game is elite too. He just never gets a chance to use it, and it's like, well, maybe those are the, like, Volk. We do it for respect. Volk gets another crack, great fighter. But yeah, maybe I want to see Lopez and then Evlov get shots and see what, like, a difference approach to Topuria will be. And after that, yeah, I mean, I'm seeing an aging division. Maybe Aljamain Sterling goes on some sort of run and makes, like, because he's like an interesting style matchup or something. But, like, all these guys look like they're getting older. They're not at the level of these top three or four guys in the division. I completely agree with you, Dave. I don't see anyone beating this dude.
Topuria was talking after the fight as well about possibly moving up to lightweight for, like, a super fight against Makhachev, which everyone seems to want. That'd be incredible to see. But I want to see one or two more guys in featherweight get a shot at the title before Tavares moves up.
Well, the other thing is McIntyre was talking about moving up to fight Bilal Muhammad.
Everyone wants to do it because you get pay-per-view points while you're the champion. You move up and you lose. It's like, oh, well, I guess I didn't do it, but I'm still the champ. Like, it's such like a very little risk move to do, to go up and do that. Yeah, you might get a loss on your record, but you're still a champion, and maybe you're a double champion. Like, no wonder everybody wants to do this thing. And plus, in theory, the champion fighting another champion is a money fight, and you make more. Like,
yeah,
it's exactly. I'm tired of it. I want your division to be clean before you start moving up.
Yeah, and that's the thing is Topuria, like Volkanovski and Holloway, which he's gonna have matches with those guys. They're both older guys. He's already beaten. Lopez and Ivalov are both sitting there, as is, like, Arnold Allen. I don't care that much about Yair Rodriguez and Brandon Key, but, like, the guy's got people to fight in his division.
Yeah.
Same with Makhachev. I mean, like, I'm a little bit frustrated with the whole, like, Tapuri's going to go up to fight Makhachev, and Makhachev's going to go up to fight Muhammad, and, like, Muhammad's going to go up to fight Driscus, and Driscus is going to, like, walk around and, you know, wait till Pereira goes up to fight heavyweight or whatever. Like, what are we doing here? Like, you guys have got divisions that you're supposed to be the kingpins of. Go clean out your division. And the other thing is, like, this whole thing messes up all the timing of those divisions because you have the champion off on an adventure, and you got the contenders killing each other off in the division.
Your division has to be wiped out, and that's the sort of move that gives the division some time to find another contender. But yeah, Topuria's looking great, but Topuria defending the belt once and moving up, I got no time for that.
The obvious fight is Movsar Sterling winner, right? I mean, that's UFC 310. So that, you know, unless he wants to fight immediately or something like that, but it's like this moving up stuff? No. I mean, if he wants to... Like, the only thing I could see it is if they had a move-up fight very, very soon, and then, but under the impression that his next fight after that will be, like, the winner of Movsar and Sterling or something like that. You got to be fighting in featherweight if you're the featherweight champion.
Makhachev has already had, like, multiple fights with Volkanovski. So, like, how many fights is Makhachev going to get where he gets a chalker guy from the division below?
Hamzat Chimaev was forced to choose middleweight, and he was the last guy on the scale. He made it, and I was unsure how he's going to do against Robert Whittaker because like, Chimaev has been incredible. But you know, Whittaker is so one of the top guys in middleweight, former champion, can kind of do a lot of stuff. And Chimaev, he just ran through him, and he hurt him too. That face crank, broke his jaw or something. It really messed up his jaw.
He hit him with this giant hook in the face. You could tell that Whittaker was wobbly. And then, you know, he gets Whittaker down and he goes through this over the jaw face crank choke, you know, like a rear naked choke, but it went over the guy's jaw. And I don't know if it was the punch or if it was the squeeze, but he fractured his jaw. Whittaker's posted all kinds of gross shots of his jaws, you know, fractured, his teeth are pushed in. It's a nightmare. And I mean, like, Whittaker went for this fast tap, and I'm like, man, it is unlike Bobby Knuckles to go for a fast tap. Then he saw pictures of the injury, and I'm like, oh my god, you should tap faster, dude. You need to get out of there.
Yeah, it looked like something for Terrifier.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, definitely. I mean, this was just, I don't know, man. I guess Whittaker, I had expected more from him, but maybe you get the right shot, you take the shot, you get an injury, and it just stalls it. But that's huge for Chimaev. Like, you got to think at this point, I'm not sure what the next schedule is. I haven't looked at the middleweight schedule for, like, Dricus and them, but it's like, you've got Strickland, you've got Dricus. Like, this is where he's going now. He's already beaten, what, number three? So... Yeah. Next fight is either a title shot or the number one contender.
So, I mean, like, the thing with Hamzat Chimaev, he's been off for a while. And, I mean, you know, I thought this was actually kind of a step up because, in my mind, he hasn't really done that much in the division.
He's ranked 13 going into this fight. He feels like the next title contender, but he never fights a top-ranked guy.
But this is the time he fought the top-ranked guy. And, you know, he came in and he's like, look, I had issues with depression. I'm feeling better now. I've taken care of it. You know, his hair is growing in. He doesn't look like a psycho as much anymore. And then, like, Dricus is like, well, you know, this is a tough loss. I really love Bobby, but, hey, I'm happy to take that zero away from Hamza. So here you've got a champion who's not looking to go on a weird adventure, who's sitting there being like, yeah, I've already beat 1, 2, and 3. Give me number 4. Hamzat's number 3 or for number 4 now. Throw him in there with Rodriguez and see what he can do.
Hamzat's just different, though. Like, we've been missing him. He's kind of annoying. He misses weight. He has some weird injuries. But when he's in the cage, he is just a different animal. Like, I've never seen anyone do anything like that to Robert Whittaker. That was the first time Robert Whittaker's ever been subbed. And he did it so quick. Like, he, from the first bell, Whittaker had nothing. Like, Hamzat just jumped him, grabbed a leg, and took him down and just dominated from the bell. And it was so crazy to see it.
He's terrifying in the first round. People have got to get him out of the first round. You got to, like, just run from the dude for 5 minutes. Just turn around and run.
Burns, as the fight went on, Burns had some success. Usman had some success. These even smaller guys did okay as the fight went on, right? That's exactly right. But, you know, him blitzing Robert Whittaker in one round is just like, oh, Jesus, man. I really can't wait to see him fight Duplessis. Yeah, like, that is wild. There's been word of Adesanya fighting Imavov, which is 2 and 4, fighting each other. I think Strickland was kind of hoping he was just going to be able to just kind of get dealt in. But I don't want to see that as much as I want to see Chimaev. The only problem with Chimaev is he fights like once a year, and it looks like it's only overseas. And it's like, oh, well, is Rikas going to wait a year for this fight? I'd rather it doesn't.
It's a lot of what this is. You know, you compare it to, you know, what Khabib used to do, right? Khabib, everything had to align. He had to be 100%, and then he would fight. And that's why he is gone down in history as one of the greatest of all time, because he picked his spots. Obviously, he beat the right guys at the right time. But yeah, there were times when he was like, when is Khabib ever going to fight again? You know, and Chimaev, it's the same kind of thing. It's that mentality of, I want to win. I want to go in 100%. I want to be ready to go and give my best. And that's what he's doing. And it's working for him so far. I think that the prospect of a title shot, I think, might move the clock a little bit for him. Obviously, he dispatched Whittaker very quickly. So I don't see them going to Dubai for this or Abu Dhabi. I think they're going to want to have this in Vegas.
I don't know if he can. It's been too long since he's been in the country.
Yeah, you never know, right? I'm not sure what's going on behind the scenes, but and it depends. I mean, I'm sure if the money is there and, you know, the right guys behind the scenes are putting the right money in, they do it in Abu Dhabi on Fight Island or whatever. But, you know, I would think that for a higher weight class division title shot, you kind of want it to be in Vegas. But, you know, maybe it's not possible.
Maybe
do it in Africa.
The other thing is, like, you have to remember that, like, in about, like, a week from now, it could be that that Kamzat's Russian passport doesn't matter at all and he will be able to fight in Vegas. Obviously, there's issues now, but those issues might not last forever.
We'll see. Something interesting is happening on November 5th, right? That could change things a bit.
We're watching Alex Pereira, light heavyweight champion, fight like number 8 ranked guys in the division. Well, Magomed Ankalaev, on like the longest win streak going, just isn't getting the shot. And I was surprised. I was surprised that they're like, no. He's fighting Alexander Rachik, despite Pereira needing contenders every 4 months.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously Ankalaev, he's made a pretty good run to, you know, be worthy of getting the shot. And I mean, like, you know, I had no problem with Alex Pereira taking the fight with Khalil Roundtree, because, let's be honest, Pereira saved like 4 pay-per-views in a row, 5 pay-per-views in a row. So all on short notice. So I think he was entitled to ask for, like, hey, give me this guy, or like, who's up? And then, like, Ankalaev can wait to have full training camp. So I have no problem with that. And, you know, and that said, like, Ankalaev comes in, the shot's on the line, Rakic really beats him up in the first round, and you're like, oh my god, Rakic is finally going to get it done, because this is a guy who's lost 3 number one contenderships in a row. And, you know, he's doing real well, and it goes into the third round, the coaches give him advice of, like, hey, you've got this, take this round off. And I always get, like, it's always questionable when, like, you give that guy that advice, particularly when your guy obviously and clearly lost round 2, and there's no arguable way that anyone could think he won round 2. So I have no idea why you were, like, give away round 3 when you've already lost round 2. So Rakic cruises to a stupid-looking loss, and just looks absolutely ridiculous. But I guess Ankalaev gets a title shot off of it.
Finally, it seems like they're biting on, okay, well, it has to be Ankalaev next. It's not like this was the most like exciting performance or whatever, but yeah, like I don't even blame both guys for taking it easy. Like they you know, this is a very important fight, not easy, but like safe, because like this is a very important fight. And realistically, the winner of this fight should fight for the title next. But yeah, Ankalaev got it done, and unfortunately, the thing is, like, for a guy who's capable of such violence, Ankalaev is also capable of not super exciting fights, which is also probably doesn't help his case. But God, where else? How can Pereira fight anybody else other than this guy? How many? When's his last? His last loss had to be the Paul Craig loss in his first fight. That was 2018.
It's frustrating because, you know, a fight like this, obviously two big names, both guys worthy, they're top five guys. This fight should never have happened. And we got the kind of fight from a fight that should never have happened, where both guys are like a little bit tentative and they don't want to lose. And they're trying to, granted, they want a W, they want to get a title shot. I understand that. I'm not blaming these guys for it. I'm blaming the fact that this fight actually happened instead of Ankalaev just fighting Pereira.
I like this fight happening because, let's be honest, Pereira fought a month ago. He fought this month. He's already fought this month. What was he going to do, fight again this month? The guy's fought four times in the last calendar year. He needs a full camp to fight Ankalaev. So, like, what are you going to do? Have Ankalaev just sit on the shelf for X amount of time?
Well, it should have been Ankalaev in the first place, but it was on fairly short notice, and it was a smart fight for Pereira. So Pereira got a layup instead, right? And I see Dave's point that Pereira's going to bail you out every 3 months or whatever like that. Don't stick him in a bad scenario.
They pretty much gave Roundtree to Pereira as a thank you for helping us the last 19 pay-per-views that you've done. But yeah, Ankalaev versus Rakic was a fight that eventually was going to happen if Ankalaev didn't get the title shot. But yeah, the tentativeness in the fight made it not as good as anyone wanted it to be. If they said this is 100% a number one contenders, I think we would have seen a lot more. But they didn't give us that because I don't know what they want to do with Ankalaev, and it's just kind of
that's the other thing is, like, they know Ankalaev can be boring. They know he's not going to be a big draw. Hill, Błachowicz, Prochazka, they're all there with their hands up. And again, Pereira's another guy who wants to go on an adventure. So, I mean, like, you know, if they're like, if John Jones is like, hey, things aren't working out with Aspinall and Stipe, give me Pereira. Pereira will go up to go heavyweight in a second. So, I mean, like, there's a lot of moving parts there. I get it. But at the same time, I mean, like, I think it has to be Ankalaev next. And I'm also glad that Ankalaev didn't sit on the shelf waiting for his shot. I'm glad that he actually was like, give me a guy and I'm going to beat him.
In featherweight, Eliron Murphy versus Dan Ige. Dan Ige's tough, but some guys are just stronger and better. Good fight, though.
I love the Dan Ige, but you beat him to get over the line. So Leroy Murphy is now over the lines. Good for you, Leroy.
Well, Leroy Murphy was higher ranked than Dan Ige coming into this fight. It was so hard for me to get up for this fight. I mean, yes, it was a good fight. Both guys are really tough fighters, but this fight is completely inconsequential. Like, it's two guys fighting each other who were, you know, it's basically two guys who want to stay active. But, like, let's say Ige beats Leroy Murphy. Okay, number 14 just beat number 12, and he switched spots. Like, I don't know. It's difficult for me to – there's no big prospect push. Neither of these guys are going to fight for a title. They're both, like, next to each other in the rankings. I don't know. It feels bad for me to say because it was a good fight, and both these guys are tough guys, and I actually like both these guys, but this fight just meant nothing.
I think Murphy could eventually move up. What do you think?
Yeah, that said, like, Murphy is on like a 7-fight win streak, 6-fight win. Like, the guy's real good. I wouldn't mind seeing Leroy Murphy take on some of like the old deadwood of the featherweight division, because there has been a log jam at the top with Volkanovski and Holloway kind of hanging out there forever. So I mean, like, yeah, let's see like Yair Rodriguez fight Leroy Murphy.
Yeah, that's what I'm into, because I think Leroy Murphy's really good. And there was moments in that first round where I thought he was getting knocked out. I think Dan Ige was landing some beautiful strikes, and Leroy Murphy, it seemed like he's never felt those before, and he bounced back really well in the last two rounds and finished, and like didn't obviously finish it, but he finished on top and won the decision. But Dan Ige, man, you just feel for this guy. He's been in featherweight some of the hardest moments of featherweight, and he's fought everyone, and he always goes on these little three fight win streaks, and then he loses two in a row to these tough guys, and it's unsettling for me because I love him so much.
It's not like I have a hard time feeling bad for him, because look at all the opportunities that he's had, and look at the names of, like, it's not like he ran into like the number one a couple of times and fell apart, like Cater, Zombie, Josh Emmett, Bovsar, Bryce Mitchell. Like, he's failed at every opportunity to get past number like 13. So he's kind of exactly where he should be given his performances.
He's like the Drew Dober or like the Ryan Barberina of featherweight.
Exactly.
Where like I'm always going to enjoy a Dan Ige fight, because like Dan Ige is going to come in and like you put him in there with an Andre Fili or a Damon Jackson, those guys are getting knocked out consistently. Dan Ige will charge them or punch them in the face.
There was a little sketchiness with the whole Abu Dhabi thing. Like, they obviously did the whole really sucking up to the local government deal, which I guess you have to do when they're buying the show. It was strange. They had ring girls, but all the broadcasting women all had prior engagements the day of the fight and had to leave, so they didn't attend the actual show. And UFC even, like, they were really pushing it. There was the one video they put up, is this the greatest card in UFC history on paper or something like that? And I'm like, what? How much money did they give you to ask that question?
A lot. The answer is a lot. You know, but really, at the end of the day, you go over there, you're getting the money, you got to do what they say. They're effectively your boss for this card. Like, let's not.
Do you see the post-fight press conference questions? One of them was, someone said, I don't have a question, Dana White. I just really want to appreciate what you did for the sport. And I want you to know that after 100 or 150 years, your name will always be there. Never stop what you're doing. Never retire. That was the post-fight question. Another one was, first of all, I owe you an apology, Dana White. I was one of the people that hated Power Slap. And my God, you're 100% right. We are all wrong. I respect you so much for it.
Well, and then, like, the third of the questions was, the guy was like, Ilya Dupree, like, what do you know about being from the streets? You're not really from the streets. And reporter almost picked a fight with Ilya Dupree.
Insanity, which is just great, because Dana White, who's on the RG3 podcast? Yeah, he's like, Dana White goes off on this big rant about the state of MMA journalism. Misinformation, you don't know what's real and what's not real when you're looking at stuff on social media. The biggest problem is that real journalists don't exist anymore. All the integrity is gone. Everyone who would ask a real question is banned. These are the people that you credential. Why are you of all people complaining about quality of journalism? This is like a bizarre world, man.
It's not a bizarre world. It's the world we're living in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
insanity.
The thing is, you can now, if you have the power and if you have, you know, money and if you, you know, have a big backing behind you, you can completely control the narrative. Like, that's exactly what you can do now. And obviously, a lot of people are going to see through it, but it's not really going to matter who sees through it, because you have the money, the power, and the backing. So as long as you're giving the people with the money, power, and backing what they want, you can completely control what happens and control the narrative, and you can say whatever you want. That's where we're at right now. You get your little script in your pocket and you say exactly what the people with the money who control your access will tell you to say, and you've been a good boy or a good girl, and now you get to come in the door and do whatever, and you get, you know, some financial backing for your podcast if your name is that level and that sort of thing. You get risen up the rankings, and you make more money if you want to actually monetize, right? Like, there's one of two ways to go: the extreme or play the game. That's how it works. Me personally, like, I don't care, right? So, but it is, you know, the fact that, you know, we have this kind of era, and yeah, like, just let people through the door. If they ask, like, if they ask a controversial question about, like, you know, fighter pair or whatever, then come, even if you brush them off, come up with an answer that's not really answering the question, like pretty much every politician does, at least you've let them in the door, and people can say, well, you know, you didn't answer the question, but it's not like you're cooking the books.
Yeah,
I don't know, whatever.
Okay, on that note, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. There's just a little bit of MMA news, and then we'll talk about the upcoming UFC fight card in Edmonton. Be right back.
Hi. Hey, I'm Brandon Moreno, and listen for the Hammer.
And we are back at 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com. And that was Brandon Moreno, who's going to be in the main event against Amir Albazi this Saturday.
UFC returns to Edmonton for the first time in about 5 years. And so we'll be talking about that just in a minute. But just wanted to get one or two things out of the way that we didn't have time for in the first half of the show. Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, he got some preliminary numbers for the PFL Battle of the Giants, the Francis Ngannou versus Hanon Ferreira pay-per-view from was it last week. And for traditional pay-per-view, something like 10,000 buys or something like that, like paying these guys millions of dollars, and they're not doesn't look like it's drawing. It didn't feel like a very big deal when it was going on or whatever, but at least the fighters themselves are getting paid, and the PFL said that they're coming back. I think it's in November, Liam, with another finals with $6 million prizes and that too. So PFL still kicking along, even though what I thought was their big shot at a big pay-per-view with Francis Ngannou and Cyborg headlining doesn't seem like it got much traction.
I'm just saying, video games are a lot easier to play when you've got the infinite money hack on.
But the Saudi Arabia money hack, yeah.
They both have it, so it's kind of on the same plane. It's just one, they both have all the money in the world to play with. One's paying their fighters and one's not, so there you go.
Did you see, I hate to rail on Dana White some more, but like his press conferences this week were extra bad. During the pre-fight stuff, he said both in the same answer about that pay-per-view, whether he watched it or whatever, it was that Francis Ngannou is all about the money, and we offered him more money, but he didn't stay. And it's like, they can't even make up their mind. They shouldn't be worried about the business that Francis Ngannou is bringing to PFL, but it must still like kind of grill the UFC a little bit, because yeah, they can't even keep their story straight on whether he's greedy or not, and if they offered him too much money or not enough money. And we lived through that whole John Jones Francis Ngannou negotiation thing, and it's just nuts. But what really got me was that post fight, Dana White's like, you know what? I just didn't like Francis as a person. He's not a good guy.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. He's like, if Francis would fire, if Francis had lost, was going to fire him anyways. He's not a good guy. He's not a good person. Look, I don't know Francis Ngannou in life, but what I will say is he's always been pretty quiet and humble. And Dana White, let's be honest, he's yelled at me publicly a couple of times. So like, I don't think you get to like play the like I'm the nice guy in the scenario card. And like, in terms of, well, you know, he's greedy. He left because he wanted to make more money. Yeah, it's a job. That's how jobs work.
There's no bigger way to insult the UFC and Dana White than to ask for more money. That's what makes you a bad guy.
Yep.
Yeah, well, he's greedy. He went to a job that paid him more.
But they also can't say that they got outbid. So they also have to do the double speak answer of we offered him more money. He didn't take it because he's all about the money.
Well, to me, like, you know, talking about like questions that you would not be allowed to come back to the UFC for. The question that I would ask is, well, who has a higher net worth right now, Francis Ngannou or John Jones?
So, which doesn't matter because we're not invited anymore anyway.
Yeah,
exactly.
But that's the other.
At least, you know what, I will say, and I think this is why Dana keeps kind of his popularity, because he'll just flat out say something and say the other thing, and it gives us something to talk about, and something to talk about, and he'll actually give an answer, even if it's like a straight up, untruth, insane answer. He'll still give an answer. He won't do the jog around, dodge the question, professional answer kind of thing. So that makes it more interesting. So we'll give that to him. He's always been interesting.
He has been interesting, and I hope that for 150 years from now, they'll still be talking about his name like he did in creating Power Slap. And I mean, like, I think maybe they'll probably even build statues of him, around Vegas.
A statue of him is definitely going up in Vegas. Like, you joke, but no, he's getting a statue in Vegas.
Yeah, it's going to be a statue of him, like, slapping someone in honor of his creation of Power Slap.
Francis Ngannou, his side.
His wife.
Francis Ngannou didn't come back quite as hard as Liam just did there with Antwerp. which is also true. His only comeback was Dana's lost in this situation. He can't stand it. Bro, I want everything. I think the problem is he can't handle this loss. I'm sure he's been praying for my downfall. And hey, you know, Francis Ngannou was one of the rare people who came out of a fight with the UFC, I don't even think arguably, ahead. And that's rage bait for Dana White, I guess. The fighters from the antitrust suit, it was preliminary approved, so they will get it. They will be splitting their, I guess, after all the fees and everything, $260 million or whatever after the lawyers and stuff. So money is coming out that we talked about a couple weeks ago, that like 100 fighters wrote those letters saying that they can't wait for the money. They need it now for their health. It looks like that the settlement is done. They're going to get the money. And then we'll move on. And the post-2017 settlements, the Johnson suit, which, you know, may actually create business changes, will be next. So, those fighters who, for good reason, were practically begging for this money as soon as possible, looks like they're going to be getting it soon. And actually, just before I forget, easy to bash on Dana White in that for many things this week, but he did say during the post-fight press conference, an actual reporter did ask about Shane Carwin. And he said that he's been helping him out. They've been working with Shane Carwin for a long time. So they may have been helping out Shane Carwin additionally. Now, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of other fighters that need assistance too. We don't know about them. We know for sure that they cut off Spencer Fisher after the Endeavor sale. But Shane Carwin, at least, there is the potential that there are fighters that the UFC has been helping. To what extent, I don't know. But that credit has to go, right?
Yeah. There always has been guys that the UFC takes care of, right? I mean, that's in general, there's always people that, you know, any company takes care of over others. Generally, at the end of the day, the rules have to change and the system has to change for everyone to be helped. I'm just glad these guys are going to get their money. I hope it's not tied up in back and forth appeals and legal stuff for years and years and years. I just want these folks who desperately need the money to just get it.
You know what the scary thing is that, the money just goes to them, right? It's just going to be wired to them. They don't need to do anything. They just have to sit tight, fill out a form, and the money comes. And apparently, especially in Brazil, all these lawyers and all these people are coming out, hey, you need my help to get this money. And like the fighters are being approached. God, I wish I could remember who it was, but I was saying that like fighters are being approached by shady dudes who are like, oh, to get this money, you need my help.
Here's something interesting. If the UFC wants to really, provide, obviously, yes, they're losing a lawsuit, they're paying a settlement. But like, if you really want to make some good faith publicly and that sort of thing, provide some assistance to these guys for like, a little bit of advice, like some financial advice. You're on a Zoom call with them for like an hour and you give them to say, okay, when you get this money, I have a little plan for you here. Do this, 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 and just give them some advice. Let these guys give these guys the facts and maybe like give them a little bit of support. I'm not saying you have to like provide them with like a full personal financial advisor, but like, as I said, like an hour Zoom call where you just lay out the stuff to them and you say, here, where you're getting this much money, this is what you should do with it, and that sort of thing. And just put them on the right path so they don't, get caught up in all this stuff. Because you're talking about guys making bad decisions. Half these guys are struggling with like CTE and medical issues, right? Like, and they've been in poverty for a while, some of these guys, depending on, if you take their depositions as fact, which I would say it's a deposition, so I would. So yeah, give these guys a little bit of support, and then it shows you, and even if something's a little bit selfish as well, because it shows, public opinion, help, that sort of thing, and maybe that helps you out in a further lawsuit. Who knows? I don't know. I just think that it sucks to hear that, the vultures are coming out for these guys. I'm not surprised, and I'm certainly not impressed.
Nasty stuff, but it's what's happened, and we got to talk about it. Let's move on to a pretty decent fight night. The UFC's returning to Edmonton. It's been a while. They haven't always brought their best foot forward. I think the last time was Holloway versus Edgar as a title fight, which isn't so bad. But this is a fight night, main evented by former flyweight champion Brandon Moreno, November 2nd, versus Amir Albazi, a guy who, he has his own claim to a title shot. The guy hasn't lost in the UFC. He's been fairly inactive, but 5-0. The big win is the Kai Kara-France one, which is like pretty sketchy. It's a pretty, pretty rough win there, but he beat Kai Kara-France. So, I was always okay with the idea of him needing one more to get the title shot, despite his high ranking. Hey, if you beat Brandon Moreno, you got a title shot to me. And right now the UFC is Kaya Zakura getting the next title shot coming from outside the organization. So you obviously need an internal contender, a currently ranked contender. So number two, Moreno, number three, Albazi. I'm good with this for next.
So am I. Yeah, I think it's good matchmaking. You know, Moreno, he's on two straight losses, but both are close, you know, split decisions against really, really top level guys. To me, I think that Brandon Moreno is still got enough to beat Albazi. We've seen some great things from Albazi, but just, as you said, that Kaikara France was a little iffy, and that's been his only really big test. So I am going to go slightly with Moreno, even though he's not like at the top, top level that he used to be. I'm still sticking with Moreno here.
Brandon Moreno has only really lost like Weibel and Pantoja and Figueiredo, and those are all guys that we've never really seen Amir Albazi in there with people at that level or Brandon Moreno's level. So the other thing that's weird is Brandon Moreno is actually the younger of the two guys. So I'm going to go with you on the Moreno train.
Yeah, very slightly younger. I guess like he feels like a little old news now with Pantoja being the champion, and Moreno's just a guy who just, Pantoja has his number. So it's like, oh, okay, well, but that doesn't, as Dave said, that doesn't mean that he is not still a great fighter. The losses are championship level guys, number one ranked level guys. Moreno is still hanging in there at the top of this division. And he's just more not dynamic than Albazi. Albazi had one big test. He won the fight, like all credit there. But I don't think he looked incredible in that fight. And that was really his only test. Moreno is a busier striker. He's taller and longer. I know Albazi's a good wrestler as well, but Moreno kind of has like this really like kind of slippery, you know, grappling game and stuff too. I just don't know what Albazi does better than Moreno, and it makes it tough for me to.
The other thing is like I think this fight goes five rounds, and I don't know if you want to go five rounds with a guy who's as active as Brandon Moreno.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, I just don't think Albazi's the guy, but maybe he squeaks through another close decision and makes himself undeniable. Oddsmakers agree with Moreno, not by a lot, -162 favorite, but I feel pretty good with the Moreno call here too. It's interesting, the main event was originally announced as this fight before they added the flyweight fight, and not that that's not a good flyweight fight. Brandon Moreno, a joy to watch, probably the bigger name maybe now, but it's even that's hard to say. But originally, I was fine with the women's flyweight fight between Erin Blanchfield and Rose Namajunas, the main event. I thought that was a perfectly serviceable main, and it makes for a pretty good co-main as well, and it's still five rounds.
Erin Blanchfield is kind of almost there. Like, you think that she should be in a title fight, and this felt like it was going to be a title fight, a title eliminator.
She wasn't a title eliminator, she just lost it. That's the problem.
Yeah,
but then Fiore beat both these girls.
But like when Rose Namajunas is a former champion, she's been there like for forever. Erin Blanchfield's coming off a loss. Rose Namajunas is on two straight wins. But her two straight wins are not over anyone that like is super exciting to me. Like Amanda Hibas and Tracy Cortez, if they're good, but they're not like, they don't get you a title shot. So, I mean, like, if Blanchfield wins this one, it rehabilitates her fully and it puts her back in the picture. If Rose Namajunas wins this one, I think it's a big enough win that, like, maybe she can fight someone for a belt. So,
oh, it's big. Oh, yeah. Like, this, the winner here has, I mean, Fiore is obviously next, as Greg said, having beat both of them. But, yeah, the winner of this fight's back in the conversation for sure.
Yeah, there's, I mean, Thug Rose has always had, like, this awesome versatility. I mean, she's beaten opponents in so many different ways. She has the cheat code for Zhang Weili. I mean, it's so difficult to call a Rose fight because it's, you know, she can beat Zhang Weili twice, but she can have the worst fight in UFC history with Carla Esparza and lose that, right? So I would say Blanchfield is more sure, I think, of what you get, where, yes, there's a line because she did lose to Manon Fiore, but up until then, she was just buzzsawing through. I mean, what she did to Jessica Andrade, and, like, you know, Talia Santos after that, like, I think that she right now is better than Rose, not by like a decided amount, but I just feel like she's still on the upswing. Fiore beat Rose as well, so it's not like Blanchfield lost to somebody who is not top level. Like Fiore is probably like the highest level in the division. I would say I'm gonna call Blanchfield here. Rose could show up and do Rose things and look like a complete world beater as she's done before, but I just feel like Blanchfield is the safer bet here.
I like Blanchfield, and I mean, like, she had a ton of momentum, but the problem is Maynard Fiore derailed that momentum, and now she's going against Rose Namajunas, and I think, like, Namajunas, when she's on, she's just one of the best that's ever done it. I know it's like 6 versus 7 right now, but Namajunas has been up to like champion. She's been up to 1 or 2.
Oh, it's 3 versus 5. I think that's like pound for pound. I think it's 3 versus 5 for the division.
But look at the level.
They're pound for pound girls.
They're pound for pound girls. I just think that like Rose Namajunas' peak is higher, and I think that like she's not someone that you're gonna go over. Or you're gonna go out there and like overwhelm her or like throw her down and get a submission victory, which is a lot of what Blanchfield's game is. So if you don't have the tap out and this fight gets contested on his feet, I think Namajunas wins it.
Well, I definitely agree that Rose's peak is higher. There's 4 all-time great strawweights, and she's beat 3 of them. Just that her outlier is that Esparza just always had her number, which is just so ridiculous, right? And I think the Esparza is the fights are the reason why I'm going to go Aaron Blanchfield, because I agree with you, Dave. Namajunas is better on the feet. I was wondering how good she was going to be at flyweight. She looked very sluggish in those first couple fights. I didn't think she, after that Fiore fight, I was just like, I don't think she has it anymore. But then, you know, Hibas and Cortez, it's like she showed up. She still has it. I'm just not sure at what level. But the Esparza fight freaks me out because as good as Rose is on her feet, not Fiore good apparently, but, you know, as good as she is still on her feet and she's got like a good submission game and stuff, I think she's afraid to get out wrestled. I think part of that Esparza fight was that she was afraid of getting taken down and that happened to her. And Aaron Blanchfield is better at that now. I think wrestling, if it's on the feet, I think Rose can win some rounds. And Blanchfield's not bad standing. I think her kryptonite is getting out wrestled, and I think Blanchfield is young enough and strong enough that she's going to win the rounds that way. And you know, I do think that submission is coming. I do think she's going to choke her out. So the odds are damn close. Blanchfield is the favorite, but barely -125. I actually like this fight more. I mean, they both have like good title implications and stuff, but I'm actually more interested in this fight than the main event.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe because Almiro Bazzi isn't particularly excited to watch. I like the style matchup better. In heavyweight, Derek Lewis, yes, he's been losing some fights and stuff, but Derek Lewis, even till very recently, is like a reliable fight night headliner. So for him to be 3 fights down on this card actually speaks quite a bit to the name value of this Edmonton fight night. Derek Lewis versus the newish Janita Deniz.
I think I saw Derek Lewis actually went to the Oilers game. He was in the crowd and he did a little interview and everything, saying that he likes hockey because they fight. But yeah, so this, I think, is somewhere where Deniz can potentially look good. I mean, he could potentially look horrible, too. He's 8-0 so far, but he hasn't faced anybody really big. It's tough to say because you don't know what he brings against the top-level guys. We haven't seen it yet. Derek Lewis, we know he can get knocked out, and we know he knocks guys out. So this has to be a knockout. Which way it's going to go, I mean, it's tough, but I think I may go with Deniz. I think there's a secret method here behind the matchmaking where they want Deniz to do something big. And Derek Lewis, he'll leave himself open. He will. So I think it's going to be a really cool knockout, and I'm leaning towards Deniz here.
If this fight happened 5 years ago or even 2 years ago, I'd have called Derek Lewis 100%. But the back is really, really in trouble. He's still got that huge knockout power, and he always will have it. But I've seen him get out-kickboxed lately. And, I mean, like, Janita Deniz is a very good kickboxer, very, very good Muay Thai. I think that maybe he's able to move around Lewis and just line him up on the feet.
You guys are right. Like, this is exactly the kind of fight a couple years ago. Yeah, Lewis gets finished. He gets knocked. He gets grappled. He gets knocked out. Like, lots of guys beat him, but like pretty damn good, dangerous guys beat him and specialized strikers and grapplers and stuff. But otherwise, unless you're Curtis Blaydes, it's generally just guys who don't really, they're not really strong top 15 names. They're just kind of there in a weak heavyweight division. He gets the knockout. And that's exactly what I think what would happen here. Deniz would have a little success and then Lewis would knock him out. It's really hard to have that much faith in him right now. Dave said the injuries, the beatings he's taken in some of these fights, like, you know, he had like the back-to-back gone Tuivasa Pavlovich knockouts. Like, he's not getting any younger. Like, there's always a chance with Lewis. You know, we don't know what Deniz's level is. He couldn't finish Carl Williams. You know, we don't know what this guy's level is at in UFC, but we know that Derek Lewis is he's probably pretty vulnerable now in a lot of ways. So yeah, I'll go Deniz. I don't feel strongly about it. If Lewis flattens him with some shot, I also would not be surprised. Deniz is the favorite too. He's a -170, so I think that's right up our alley there. Light heavyweight fight: Cal Machado versus Brenson Ribeiro. I don't know if this is
a drop off.
This is what these guys have. I don't even think these guys have won in the UFC.
Yeah, no, they're like collectively 0-5, I think. So Machado has his two. He won on Contender Series and then two losses in the UFC, both unanimous decisions to, you know, okay guys at best. And then Ribeiro is looking at two UFC losses as well. So pardon me, I mistook. So they both had four UFC fights combined and they're 0-2 each. And they're not losing to like world beaters either. I'm going to go Machado just because the names are a little bit better and they were decisions. Ribeiro's already been knocked out once in the UFC. And, you know, I think he feels like more of a kind of a really spotty guy, whereas Machado might have a little bit more. So I'm going to go with Machado.
Who can care?
One, I agree with Dave, who could care. But if I have to care, but Machado's losses, again, they were decision losses against guys who are their lower level UFC guys, but they're entrenched UFC guys. I'll go Machado. He's a -155 favorite. Sounds about right. In middleweight, so two back-to-back fights that have sort of the same story. In middleweight, Marc-Andre Barriot, he's been a long fighting UFC fighter from Canada. They gave him a rankings level fight back in January when they came to Toronto, and he didn't get it done. It was against Chris Curtis. So back in Canada, dropping the competition level a little bit lower now. It's Dustin Stolfus, who's 2-5 in the UFC.
Stolfus is mixed. He's not great, 2-5, but like the losses are against guys that are pretty reasonable. You know, Ferreira, Magomedov, and Sharp. This is a fight that's Barry Olds to lose. It is kind of a, you know, he's a Canadian guy fighting in Canada. His record is actually not great either. He is also 2 in his last 5 with 2 straight losses. So I actually think I'm going to call Stolfus here because, I mean, like, I think Barry Olds starting to get long in the tooth and slip.
In these coin flippy fights with spotty records, I generally just go with the hometown guy. So, and I'm Canadian too, so I'm going to call Barrio.
It's very easy to call against Dustin Stolfus because he gets finished a lot. He's obviously not like an elite level guy. He's got like a decent ground game and stuff, but he fights a good grappler. He gets submitted, Vieira and Mearshart. He fights pretty dangerous strikers. They wipe him out. Like, he's a guy that is going to get outstruck and outgrappled by really elite guys. But Marc-Andre Barriot isn't really an elite guy. He's just like a solidish fighter. They win some, loses some, 50-50 guy, but he's fine, and I think fine might just be enough to beat Dustin Stolfus and win a decision, like a close one. I'm going to go Barrio. Who's a favorite? He's a 2-1 favorite. Not super exciting fight. And then the same story with Mike Malott, longtime guest of the show in welterweight. The UFC came to Canada in January. They gave him Neil Magny as like a big jump up in competition to have a chance to enter the rankings. Did okay for a couple rounds, wound up getting beat. And so they dropped his level of opposition considerably, I think. And not that Trevin Giles is a bad fighter, but Trevin Giles isn't Neil Magny. Trevin Giles is a 50-50 guy.
Yeah, Trevin Giles is very beatable. So, yeah, I'm going Malott for sure.
Same here. Giles is on a 2-5 losing streak. And Malott's loss to Magny wasn't that shameful. So
the level of hate and, like, disrespect he got off of that loss, like, oh, what a, like, like, just so much of the, oh, he's a sham, and, like, he got exposed and all this stuff. It's like, it was Neil Magny, and he did fine. Yeah. Like, I think I said it before that fight. It might have been a step too high, too fast, and, like, everyone turned on him afterwards. It's like, I would like Mike Malott to come in here, and he can grapple, he can strike, he can finish in both places. Giles can have both of those things done to him. I mean, not that I like Trevin Giles as a fighter. He's a fine UFC, lower UFC level-ish guy, but Mike Malott should come in here and finish this guy and maybe get some of that love back and make another run for it. He's a pretty big favorite too, minus 250. And then also Canadian on the prelims in bantamweight, Ayman Zahabi. He's been on a run lately. He has a bit of a rough start in the UFC, but he's had a pretty nice run right now and kind of perfect opponent in a Pedro Munhoz, who has long ranked Pedro Munhoz, but a guy who is starting to accumulate the losses, and you know, I don't even think he's ranked anymore.
Yeah, it's this is good matchmaking. I think Zahabi, Pedro Munhoz, who, yeah, he's had a rough ride recently. Zahabi's on a couple of wins. It's going to be tough. Like, Pedro Munhoz is no easy out, even though he's had a rough road recently. He is going to, you're going to have to show up to beat him. I would like Zahabi to win, you know, as a Canadian. Again, it's a bit of a hard push, but that's going to be a tough one. Pedro Munhoz is a step up.
Yeah, Pedro Munhoz is really, really good, but I mean, like, I think that, like, he's positioned at a point right now where Zahabi can take him. I do think this is some beneficial matchmaking, so I'm going to go with Zahabi.
There's no shame in the Pedro Munhoz losses either. Like, yes, he's lost a lot. Kyler Phillips still look. I know that last fight against Rob Font didn't go so well, but Phillips is still a top 15 guy. And, like, Marlon Vera is a title contender. Cruz, former champion. Aldo, former champion. Edgar, former champion. Sterling, former. Like, Munhoz gets. He's enough of a name that he gets put in there with pretty good guys, and sometimes he even gets it done still. But, yeah, I think this is Zahabi's time. I think he wins the decision here. Munhoz is, like, kind of slow. Close fight. Munhoz is a very slight favorite at minus 130. So we'll see how that goes. I like this one too. Women's flyweight, Ariana Da Silva versus Jasmine Jezudevicius. Both ranked. Both had some tough losses in there, but they're hanging in there at number 13 and 14. I like both of these girls. They put on good fights.
Jasmine's going to have to show up and bring it. Da Silva's no joke. Like, she's got that loss with Karina Silva, who's also a world beater. Other than that, she's been money. So
lately,
I think Jasmine can do it, but she's going to have to bring it.
I think she's really good, so I'll judge as well.
Jasmine's fight with Miranda Maverick, I thought she looked like she could be like a future title contender. It was just this like complete performance. She just looked great. And as when her competition level went up, just like Tracy Cortez is pretty good. Natalia Silva is also really good. Like, the competition level went up, and she couldn't quite match it. And it was like it was a bit of a shame just in those two fights. But when she shows up, Jasmine can do a lot of things. And so can Ariana Da Silva. Can bite down on the mouthpiece and go and have a brawl. She can do some cool submission stuff. So her general problem was that when she gets taken down, she kind of gets oppressed. That's probably the smartest thing. Like, if Jasmine can shoot some takedowns and get top position, There's a path to victory here. I think if they stand there and they brawl, it's kind of a Silva might want. It might be a bit more of a coin flip. I think there's a path. I'm going to pick Jasmine because I think there's a path to victory here if she follows it. But it's a good fight. I want to see where it goes and how it goes. Jasmine's a favorite too. She's a minus 200 favorite. Nice odds for her. In bantamweight, Charles Jourdain and Victor Henry looking to have a solid fight. In featherweight, you're still big on this guy, Greg? Jack Shore fighting Yusuf Zalal. I mean, that's a cool fight.
I'm a fan of Jack Shore. I,